Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
She's like, I know you did EMS. She's like, will you watch this video? I won't show it to anybody else. And she goes, can you tell me if you feel like this is wrong? And I watched this video and I was like, I'm lost for words. Well, at that time, it wasn't just about that video. There was a lot of things that we were seeing in the ER. And of course, a lot of my colleagues even at times would be like, we just kind of just deal with it and try to correct it. Because a lot of times if you would reach out to the higher levels to try to get things corrected or to even teach, you know, the medics about how to be better, it was just brushed off. And so they didn't really want to deal with it. When I watched this, I wish I could say something, but yes, there's a lack of training. There's problems. There was things and discussions about certain medications they wanted to use pre-hospital in the field, such as like insulin. There's no need to have to give emergent insulin if you're only 15 minutes away from hospital. Open thoracostomies in the field. These are not things you really want to do unless you're in war, right? So we're not in war, thank goodness.
This is former medical director for Escambia County, Ramey Edler, who spoke in public for the first time yesterday since her termination of her contract a couple of years ago. Remember, she was the one who had said that there and revealed that there was inadequate training, that there was falsification of training certifications going on in Escambia County EMS. The people that she said were not doing their job retaliated against her, making false claims about her and bringing HR complaints about her because she was cleaning house and trying to get the training regimen up and going in Escambia County. Proposed about $120,000 training for everybody to try to get them trained up. The Escambia County has still not implemented that training to this day, even though they are now several years after using her protocols that she wrote, even though her medical license is no longer covering the county. This has been a long-standing problems in EMS. This is the most recent of them. And of course, this ultimately, in case you didn't follow all of this, she's the one who filed the lawsuit that led to the $5 million penalty for Escambia County because they were had uncertified people, falsified certifications for the EMS folks. And then they were filing federal Medicare claims, which were not allowed, or maybe it's Medicaid, and I apologize for not getting which one it was. But that wound up in this federal lawsuit where the county had to pay $5 million. And, oh, by the way, it could have been a lot more on that later. But she spoke for the first time yesterday, and, you know, it's kind of interesting. As she's describing these medical procedures or the, you know, bad processes that were going on in the field, and that particular case talking about a fatality out on the beach that somebody asked her to look at the video for, and she was just blown away by how bad it was. That was before she was the medical director. That was when she was just an ER surgeon or an ER doctor. And, you know, one of the things about all of this that, like I said, you know, she's the one that's been in the news a lot, but her story hasn't been told because of the litigation. Okay. And, you know, dealing with the good old boy network in Escambia County, dealing with people who were the bad actors being protected by commissioners, including Jeff Bergosh, very adamantly protecting the wrong side in this case. Remember, they paid out particularly not just the settlement to one person for alleged mistreatment, but then even paid his fines that were imposed against him. I mean, it's a crazy story about how bad the Escambia County government had been. It, specifically regarding EMS, not with the individual EMS, you know, the EMTs and paramedics that work on the trucks, but the leadership around them. Anyway, back to her comments yesterday. I'm going to be playing this all day because it's a long story, but there's a lot to it.
When I got into my position, what I started to realize was that it wasn't just the medical director There were a lot of people that were in positions within the EMS unit that were put in positions that maybe shouldn't have been there, is the best way that I'll say that. They were doing things that were not ethical, forging certifications, and these are life-saving certifications. So one thing that's required to be on the back of an ambulance would be advanced cardiac life support. So you would expect if an ambulance shows up and your loved one is in cardiac arrest or has like a slow heart rate or something, you know how to correct it or fix it. Back in the day, you know, way back in like 1970s, you would be thrown in the back of a hearse and just rushed to a hospital. Well, that's not how it is today. You have medics that have that knowledge. And yes, they go through very extensive course of training and education within like a year and a half or less, which it takes emergency medicine physicians that are board certified, like myself, you know, 4 years of medical school, 3 to 4 years of residency training. So that's a total of 8 years that they're compressing down into like a year and a half. So it's a lot of information.
And one of the challenges of that is that, you know, the doctors are supposed to understand it all. Whereas sometimes what you want from the EMS folks is just to be to do the right thing, which, of course, if you understand it, you'll do better. But sometimes you just have to have the protocols to follow. That's sort of the idea.
And the way they do that is by following protocols. And so, yes, I mean, anybody can follow a protocol. They might not know exactly why they're doing it, but they know what they're supposed to do. But if you don't get the proper training or the right curriculum, then what's going to happen? They're going to show up. They're not going to know what meds to give. They're not going to know what, like, for instance, if you have to get cardioverted, they're not going to know how many joules to cardiovert you. So these are the things that I started to recognize. And I noticed that some of these people that had titles of chiefs and over the educational department or so forth were also listed as instructors. And yet when I tested them on their instruction and they couldn't recognize a cardiac rhythm and then wanted to give a medicine that would actually make your heart go slower instead of faster, if they couldn't recognize a slow heart rate, we knew we had a big problem.
So the people who were responsible for the training, the people who were the supervisors in EMS, didn't know what they were doing. And when she tried to find out, you know, how bad does the lack of training or ineptitude go? How deep does it go? How high does it go? It's like everywhere she went, she found more problems. So she's like, this is really bad, because my medical license, her medical license is the one covering all of the activities of the lifeguards, of the jail, of EMS, of Escambia County Fire Rescue, all of that. And so, you know, her job was, we got to fix this or else, you know, I'm going to get in trouble because I'm the medical license covering for all of these improperly trained activities. By the way, one of the things that you don't catch on the recording is I happen to be sitting next to Dr. Deanna Oleski, the medical examiner, who is herself a double board certified doctor. And she's gasping, like, you know, reacting to, oh, my God, you know, like, wow. You know, when she's talking about the things that were wrong, it may not make a lot of sense to you or to me without that medical training, but she's just flabbergasted with some of the comments that she's making about, you know, what the things that she was finding. So what happens? Well, she gets in there and she starts putting in reforms, which are basically training. You know, the whole idea was, well, let's get people trained. They're out there to save lives. Let's have them at least not killing people. And people died, okay, during all of this. And so she's like, let's just get people trained so that they're able to do their job. Let's do public safety. Let's do that. And so you would think, well, I mean, obviously the Escambia County commissioners and, you know, the leadership were all on board, right? Let's make EMS function properly. Let's, you know, train the people and get everything fixed and get everything up and running. Oh, no, that's not how we do things in Escambia County. We retaliate against the person who says that we ought to fix things.
So I started to review and try to do as much research as I could. I was going through the background. I wanted to go through training certificates. And I was meeting block after block. I started to get retaliated against. I was brought to the HR office and told that that I was harassing people. I was like, how, what? I was like, I'm harassing people? How exactly am I harassing people? And then this just pretty much excelled through the course of time. Chief Nail was actually put in the position where he was able to give some oversight to our public safety department. Through that time, unfortunately, Mr. Brown's wife had gotten ill, so he had to resign as county commissioner. And he was a big support to us. But when he had to resign, things changed drastically at that time. and we weren't getting the support that we needed to make the recognized and noticed changes that we needed to make.
So Jack Brown's wife got terribly sick, and he basically resigned to take care of her. I love Jack. Jack is a very good man. Rusty Nail, who was the fire chief at the time, was a big support when she came in. The leadership kind of looked like it was right. EMS was a dumpster fire. But leadership in, like, Scambia County Fire had gotten much better, and you know, especially at the top. And you had Jack Brown, who was very supportive. And there were still big problems in, like, director of public safety position and those sorts of areas. All those people have now left ever since that, you know, all that's all cleaned out. But in any case, she said it switched when Jack Brown and Rusty Nail left, that it switched from being a supportive environment of coworkers and superiors who were willing to help to this kind of, you know, oh, my God, I'm all on my own trying to fix all of this stuff.
What we proposed was a way to fix it. So you say you can recognize the problems, but let's think, what do you do about it? So we were like, we need training to come in now. Let's see how we can do this. Well, we had funds. We were noticing that there were funds for EMS. And within those funds, money had been disappearing. Why? You know, that was things too that I was trying to figure out. Why? Where was this money going? You know, and if this is set aside for emergencies or for EMS specifically, why don't we have access to it? Well, initially, when we made the proposal, they were like, yes, you can access this. It was somewhere around the range of $120,000 to pretty much guarantee a year of training for every EMT, firefighter, paramedic, even to the lifeguards.
So again, the original plan was spend 120, get everybody trained up, which, by the way, you know, paramedics, EMTs, they want this. People who work in these fields love to get trained. Because they love to be better at their jobs. They love just the doing of it because training is usually pretty intensive and you learn a ton and that's enjoyable. Like, people who do these jobs are not like, oh, great, another training. As long as they see the value of it. And certainly in this case, and many people in the agency knew about the problems. They were afraid to speak up because they were afraid they're going to lose their jobs. There was a terrible culture of retaliation and retribution in Escambia County generally because people were afraid of the county commissioners. Particularly Stephen Barry Lumen May and Jeff Bergosh, who were in, you know, the three block that had been in charge for a while. I think at this time, actually, Jeff was a little bit new on the board. You know, he was in his first term when all of this kind of began. But still, you know, that fear that if you bring up these problems, instead of fixing them, they're going to get, you know, you're going to get blamed for bringing up the problems. Like, whistleblowers get punished rather than get listened to. Anyway, so as when Rusty and Jack left, everything changed.
To do this training, it was going to be about $120,000 to retrain and recertify everybody with guaranteed year of training. So we would rotate throughout the rotations to have them come in. That would guarantee that all their ACLS, BLS, which is basic life support, PALS, which is pediatric advanced life support that you want to know that your children are being cared for if they're in the back of an emergency vehicle, that all this stuff was going to be, like, we knew that it was accurate, it was validated, and we're going to start from, like, ground zero and just build up, potentially building one of the best EMS services we could have built here in Escambia County. And so we initially were told, okay, you'll get the funds, that shouldn't be a problem. But then we started to meet resistance after resistance, and that is when Chief Nail had stepped down. He had resigned because he's like, I can't sit back any longer and see the things that need to be done and not have the ability to do them. So he stepped down and he resigned. I was a little bit more stubborn, so.
She was, you know, she'd raised a single parent, went through medical school, endured all the debt, almost had to drop out of medical school for a variety of factors and, you know, recommitted basically to that. And then, you know, raising her daughter as a divorced single mom and trying to pay off her student loan debt and being asked to basically recruited from being an emergency doctor, being recruited by Jack Brown to be the medical examiner. And, you know, she got in there and, you know, realized the scope of the problems and said, I can't just abandon the citizens of the county and I can't just abandon all the good people at EMS who really need the reforms to be put into place. And so she goes to the Board of County Commissioners and she's terrified of it because she knows what she's up against and she knows things have changed, you know, but she's still going to plead with them.
I was terrified, but I stood up in front of this commission and really thought that I would have these people on my side to say, yeah, why would we want to see people suffering or dying in our community? You know, this is what they are representing us for. And rather than getting the support, I was attacked, pretty much is the best way to say it. So I was mocked at the dais.
She was.
You know, what do demeaned. We need to listen to her for? Because she has MD behind her name. You know, and I'm just sitting here, I'm like, what? Like, what is, you know, I'm proposing this because even response times were dangerous. And there was ways of finagling what our response times were, which is still problematic. So the national standard for an EMS ambulance to get to you is 8 minutes or less. And what we were seeing were times that were, if you were lucky, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. There was a fire crew that watched an entire movie with a patient before an ambulance got to them. So that'll give you an idea.
And you remember how for a long time I was getting, after this, I had started getting involved in this. Doug Underhill and Robert Bender, Bender in particular, was really trying his best to do well at this time with the other three votes on the board being very stubborn about this and not being very helpful, not being very forthcoming. And we were trying to get good information about just to be able to create a comparison point of are we getting better? And how many times EMS came up in my interviews with Wes Moreno talking about response times and how many trucks and how many personnel and all of this stuff. And a lot of this, a lot of what she said yesterday, we didn't really know at the time because, again, it was you couldn't talk and she was an employee and she was trying to solve it from within. And then when it became a lawsuit, couldn't talk because it's a lawsuit. And, you know, the county has been hiding all of this, has not been forthcoming about this as long as I have been here. And the whole issue of response times, they continue to act like nothing is really wrong with response times and stopped reporting. Remember, the EMS chief in January stopped reporting the weekly report that had the response, you know, the delay times, how long it took to, you know, when crews were being held for response calls. Their answer is just, we'll just stop reporting it. And I keep asking, I was like, when are we going to even resume reporting these things because that chief isn't there anymore? And no resumption as yet. So it's not like this is all fixed. This is still a problem to this day. It's better, I think, but how can one know? Because getting the information. Now, the good news, Ashley Hoffberger, this is one of the two reasons she ran for office, is because her own child had to wait for an ambulance to get there, and the dispatch couldn't even tell her how long it would be. So we have a county commission now with Mike Kohler, a nurse, Steve Stroberger, politically aligned with Mike, and I know he's in the right place for all of this stuff, and Ashley Hoffberger, who is one of her two main reasons for running was this stuff. They're still up against Lumen May and Stephen Barry and the entrenched interests in the county administration, but at least three of the commissioners are on the right side of this issue. We'll see whether the other two get on the right side of it. 526 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
A better air filter on your air conditioner is nice, but it isn't enough. It takes a lot more than that to clean the air that you breathe. This is Todd with Gulf Coast Air Care. On Wednesday's Pep Talk, we'll talk about how to keep pollen, bacteria, and other pollutants out of your lungs. Remember what I always say, if you don't have a good air filter, you are one. Let's talk Wednesday morning at 9:30 on Pep Talk.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Ever have one of those days where your gut just feels blah?
Ugh, yes.
Occasional bloating or gas could be signs that your gut is out of balance, but Align Probiotic can help. Align 24/7 Digestive Support is a daily use probiotic with a unique strain to help relieve occasional digestive issues. It's the number one doctor recommended brand. So when you feel the signs, it's time to try Align. Align Probiotic. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Local talk during your morning and afternoon drive. Local news every hour. On News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Ryder, big bucks. Stop.
Stop.
Stop what you want.
Look out! Look out!
I saw you knock.
You know, a great game show is one that you play along at home and enjoy. Every single person who ever watched Press Your Luck pretended they were pressing the button and trying to get them to tie to avoid the whammy. 528 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. By the way, that speech that Ramey Edler, former medical director, gave yesterday was at Encounter Church on 9 Mile. kudos to the pastor, Gary, who does this, where he brings in people to speak of significant, you know, civic importance. I love this program. That church has been banned from YouTube because of their expression of ideas that the owners of YouTube don't like. It's unbelievable. That stuff's still going on over COVID stuff and vaccines and abortion. And yeah, and you think that's not going on anymore. That's still going. I was flabbergasted to hear that. That is still happening to this day. We'll see how that continues after January 20th. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Excuse me. New York City Mayor Eric Adams confirming he will cooperate with ICE under certain circumstances to deport illegal immigrants. Adams emphasizing at a news conference yesterday that he wants to see illegal migrants who rape, commit robberies, or shoot at police officers be deported. He also said he wants to know what President-elect Trump has in mind when he talks about mass deportations, though. The Supreme Court today hearing some arguments in a case challenging Tennessee's ban on transgender treatment for minors. The case before the conservative majority court seeks to resolve the question of whether the ban constitutes a Fourth Amendment violation.
Yeah, whether it's going to be held to strict scrutiny or some lower standard, whether it discriminates against people on the basis of their gender is their claim, which is a ludicrous claim. But, you know, it's at the Supreme Court for reasons. So we'll see what they do about it. David, thanks so much for the update. That's going to be a very interesting conversation. Also, Wall Street Journal reports we might have a different Secretary of Defense nominee. It might not be Pete Hegseth. It might be Governor Ron DeSantis. Wow.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. Another Democrat speaking out after President Biden opted to pardon his son, Hunter, over tax and firearms convictions. Fox's Lucas Tomlinson has this.
California Governor Gavin Newsom becomes the most high-profile Democrat yet to voice his displeasure with the decision by President Biden to pardon his son, Hunter. He told Politico, quote, "With everything the president and his family have been through, I completely understand the instinct to protect Hunter."
Now, the president had previously claimed he would not pardon his son. The iconic Rockefeller Center Christmas tree being lit this evening in New York City.
It features more than 50,000 multicolored LED lights on about 5 miles worth of wire.
That is Fox's Tanya J. Powers in New York City. Ceremony set to begin about 8 p.m. Eastern Time. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3 right now. It is another cold morning, 31 degrees here in Pensacola right now with clear skies. Pensacola police officers are going to be getting a pay raise soon.
The starting salary goes from $45,011.20 to $52,500 annually. So, you know, I meet with mayors all over the country where one of the biggest problems they have is recruiting and retaining police officers, and I'm certainly dedicated to making sure that that's not a problem here.
Mayor D.C. Reeves from yesterday's press conference, Reeves says this increase will only, for right now, affect police officers, but not sergeants or lieutenants in the police department. The city's still negotiating their contracts. Reeves says Pensacola will always keep public safety front of mind, and he says they're excited to make sure their officers are paid competitively. An 18-year-old from Milton is now charged in that bonfire shooting from last weekend. Officials say Therese Nikeem Toyens was arrested yesterday. He's charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. The incident happened on Sid Hayes Road. Sheriff Johnson said more than 150 people were at the party when Toyens allegedly pulled a gun and shot another man following an argument. The victim was shot in the chest and is expected to recover. Deputies say that Toyens was fleeing the scene that night when his vehicle crashed into a deputy's patrol car. Three people fled on foot. Investigators identified Toyens as the shooter through witness interviews. A teenager in Okaloosa County is now facing charges for making a school threat. The sheriff's office there says the student was arrested Monday. The 13-year-old girl reportedly brandished a handgun during a FaceTime chat, put the gun in her own mouth, and threatened a mass shooting at Crestview High School next year. The girl also sent pictures of that gun to other friends. She admitted to making the threat, but said it was intended to be a joke. Rick Scott questioning President Biden's priorities. Biden was in Angola yesterday when he announced over $1 billion in humanitarian funding for countries in sub-Saharan Africa. Biden says it'll help families displaced by historic droughts and food insecurity. Senator Scott wrote on X that Biden is handing out tax dollars like candy while families in Florida and elsewhere are waiting for disaster aid relief. Now, a threat is responsible for locking down three schools in Osceola County. St. Cloud police say the threat was phoned in yesterday morning at St. Cloud High School. The school went on lockdown. Lockdowns were also ordered at St. Cloud Middle School and Michigan Avenue Elementary School. Those were precautionary. Police say multiple sweeps were made at the high school, but no credible threat was ever found. It's 534, News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast this morning.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. Very chilly start to your day. Temperatures in the 30s as you are waking up. Highs today near 63 degrees with partly sunny skies. As you go into the evening, we will start to see a chance of some rain. Rain showers overnight with lows tonight near 56 degrees. For Thursday morning, 70% chance of rain. High near 67 by Thursday afternoon. Thursday night temperatures dropping near 35. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thanks, Brooke. And right now, 31 degrees in Pensacola, 38 in Gulf Breeze, 28 in Milton. Our next news at 6. And breaking news anytime, I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas Oyster House, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters, today at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. They'll be discussing holiday hours, Atlas Beverage Class, fall and winter menus at Jackson's Steakhouse and Angelina's, deck the halls at Jackson's, New Year's Eve, and celebrate 12th night at Jackson's Great Southern Restaurant Week.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
This is Hill Kelly Dodge wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't drink and drive.
Hi, this is Joe with Peden Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical wishing you a very comfortable holiday season.
This is Barry Cole at Beret Jewelers wishing you a safe holiday season. Remember, please don't drink and drive.
Hi, everybody. This is Sonia Duguid with Trinity Wellness of Pensacola and now in Pace. And we just want to wish you a very happy holiday. And we're just thinking of all of you. Bye. Happy holidays.
Pep Talk, the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Stephen Schmidt is here, and of course, many of you know that he is also here representing Georgetown Technical College.
Georgetown Technical College over there on Longleaf Drive.
Pep Talk, mornings after Andrew McKay.
It's time for a talk about some Sonny's Barbecue. We got Elton Scott here in the studio looking pretty sunny.
It's the Always Sunny Show. It's perfect intro, you know?
Pep Talk, mornings 9 till 11. News Radio Pensacola.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 5:37 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Yesterday, we had a chance to talk to Sheriff Chip Simmons about a variety of matters and also asked him about Sheriff Chronister, who has been nominated to be the head of the DEA. He has, since yesterday's interview, actually withdrawn his name from consideration, but that's going to come up in the conversation, so I just want you to know that has changed a little bit in advance. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm great. It's very good to have you. Lots to get to this morning, including some cases that are not here in Escambia County. Let's start with the ones that are. Beggs Lane, the notorious camping by many, many, many homeless people. What, 50 or so at least?
Oh, at least.
Lots of trash, lots of... But you guys, based on the new law, you cannot allow public camping, and you're cleaning up the area, or somebody's cleaning up the area. What is your level of involvement?
Well, it's as simple as the Beggs Lane area. The area is being cleaned up that we're talking about is county property. Mm-hmm. That means the county owns the property. That means they can call the sheriff's office and say, remove this individual from our property, just like you would at your home or you would at your home. So that's what we're doing.
Who called you? The county
the
called?
The county. Escambia County.
Like who specifically? Do you know?
Well, we got a call. Initially, it was from the county administrator and then the people that are involved in all that. It's a combined effort by the county.
Okay, fair enough.
To their credit, they've had about 3 or 4 meetings that we've attended. And they said, okay, this is the time. They've given them 30, 60, 90 days. And they've told them that these are the resources available to you. They've had those resources been over there the last couple weekends. And so our job, whenever they came to us and said, hey, we're at the point where we need to get them gone. Mm-hmm. So like we would, again, any other private property, we go over there and we did give them a trespass warning yesterday. And we're going to go back there today. And if they're not gone, we're going to put them in jail.
Okay. So they were told they had to be gone by today. If they're still there, they go to jail.
Yeah. But again, they've known this
for months. But they've had long warning. This is not sudden.
This is not one of those things, okay, it's the coldest day of the year. We're going to get you gone. No, I drove by yesterday. There was an ambulance on standby. There was a ECAT was there to take them wherever they wanted to go. And again, this is just because they waited until the last minute. This is not a secret. This is not any kind of a sweep. But it's about time, to be honest with you. If you've seen Beggs Lane in the area that it has become, you would say what I'm saying, that this is about time. We have had numerous calls for service there. We've had stabbings there. We've had a shooting there. We just have a lot of trouble there at this particular area. Not the only one, but I'm glad to see that Escambia County seems to be doing it right. They gave them plenty of time. We get there, we give them a warning, and then we come back the next day.
And plenty of agencies there to help, including obviously Waterfront has been featured a lot in this,
right,
but several other agencies as well, Lakeview, you know, to get right, whatever service they need to get them to a safe place, which they just cannot stay there. Yeah. It's a dangerous place to go. You shouldn't go back there when it was sort of in their control, so to speak. Right. You know, and I've had, you know, kind of, I had an inkling to go look at it one time, and I talked to somebody that said, you know, hey, don't go on your own. Go with me. Let me find out if that's going to be safe. And that kind of, which is, you know, that's just being aware of the world, right?
Right. Right. And it's not their property.
Right.
But I think this is the way that you would want it to go. This is the way I would want it to go from a human aspect of things. First of all, you've allowed them to stay there. So now let's give them the services or give them the options. You know, these are your options. 1, 2, 3, 4. If you want mental health, we have mental health. If you want to go to Waterfront, we have Waterfront. We have, again, Lakeview in regards to the mental health.
Right.
If you go to a hospital, we will transport you to the hospital. And I'm not getting too much of their business, but I understand they've even allowed for some, they've been fixing some cars so people can have transportation. They've provided them, funds to, if they wanted to just stay here long enough to get out of town, to get back home, mm-hmm, they were providing them with those funds. So I think they've done it the right way.
The county's had the relocation program for a while where we'll put you on a bus, you know, send you back home if you have a home to go to. Because that's, a lot of times that's what people actually need, because they need to be around people they know, support system they know. Part of the problem of being here, if they're not from here, is they don't have anything to help them, and mm-hmm, that's even worse. So yeah, no, I agree.
And I've been telling people for years now, we are prepared to move people if you ask us to move people. Again, if it's your property, we'll remove them. But we want to do it in a humanitarian type of manner.
And as of yet, no resistance, no violence, no trouble.
We'll find out today, I guess.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, today is when you start to implement, right? Really?
Right. Yesterday we arrested two people, one for a domestic violence situation that happened in the camp.
Okay.
And then another individual had warrants on him from Texas, but they said they wanted to extradite. So we put that person in jail. But today, I spoke to a couple of people there yesterday, and I said, where do y'all plan on going? I said, we're going to move down the street, which I guess ultimately is not a solution, but at least it's a start. This, to me, has nothing to do with state statute, because that comes into effect in January.
Okay.
What this is just as a property owner saying, please come and get this.
It just happens to be a governmental property owner.
It happens to be, right.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is why I've been trying to push for a corresponding ordinance that will match the state statute, so that if there's county property that we can take action. And then I'm also asking, we talked a little bit about the cities. The city has an ordinance against public camping,
right?
But they backed off on the one
that's right
that, on the private property.
Yeah.
And what I would probably, and I'll say it here now, what I'd probably is ask them to do is reevaluate it. Private commercial to me, I don't think that they should allow people to just camp that, because what's happened is, if we have a small piece of property, even around Beggs Lane, mm-hmm. everyone's going to that property. It's a commercial piece of property, and it's and no one knew who the owner was.
Right.
So we're kind of stuck now with that particular person. So if you own commercial property, if you want someone to camp there, then give them permission. I'm okay with that. But I think that if you're like a vacant landowner, if you own commercial property.
Or dilapidated,
property,
abandoned, all yeah, that stuff.
And those are code enforcement issues. But I think there's some things that we can do. I can simply tell you that the sheriff's office is prepared to assist Scambia County and any commercial business or any private business or private landowner. If there's someone on your property you don't want there, we'll tell you, hey, you're allowing them to stay, so you have to go through the eviction process. Or... No, you're right. They got to go, and we're certainly willing to do that.
We had a shots fired at W Street in Maxwell. Was this the one where the couple was kind of driving around the block in the car, and it's a question whether they shot at the house or shot in the air or whatever? Is that the one?
Yeah, all I can tell is we got a call that what they call a shots fired disturbance. It's some sort of an issue, and the shots were fired. So we obviously want to get there pretty quickly. But what they told us was there was a guy in a black SUV that was the shooter. A white guy in an SUV. So our deputies, to their credit, while en route, they located a black SUV with a white guy driving. So they stopped this car. During that stop, we located two firearms, one of which was stolen out of Mobile, Alabama. We found some ammunition, but also concerning is we found trafficking amounts of meth and trafficking amounts of fentanyl. We also found some crack cocaine, other narcotics. And we ended up arresting there two people. We arrested, both were convicted felons, by the way. We arrested Josh DeMoss and Ashley Workman. So deputies did a good job.
So what started as a shots fired turned into a massive narcotics and weapons arrest for former felons. Color me shocked. but still, as a couple, and that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot for them, right? And plus possession as felons, right?
Yeah, well, you know, remember, there's possession of a certain drug, and then there's possession with intent to distribute.
Oh, I meant possession of the gun.
Yeah,
guns.
And then there's ultimately, I was getting into the trafficking is even a greater amount, right. amount of drugs. And you're right, possession of the firearms themselves will probably get them where they belong.
We had sort of an unusual one only because the person involved, a car stolen that y'all pitted at T and Hernandez, just middle-aged lady, and then she ran.
Yeah, you know, we've started to pit more of the stolen cars because of that connection to drive-by shootings, much
right.
like we saw with the story we just talked about. And so our deputy got behind a stolen car and turned the lights on, and the car decided that, nope, I'm not going to stop. So we stopped them. We helped them with their decision-making, and we ended up arresting the
And just for yeah. people who might not remember, the former policy was typically, if they flee, let them go because it creates too much danger to pursue, but because of the frequent use of stolen cars in drive-by shootings, you changed responses, and you're now pitting those cars because this is a way to prevent homicides or the risk of it. Just for people who haven't been tracking all of this over the time we've been talking, go ahead.
Well, I will tell you that just to make sure everyone understands, there's no statute that says we can't pursue a car for a tag light. Florida Highway Patrol has a different standard. They most of theirs is interstate and such, and so they typically will pursue for more than we would. Our policy has been, and other agencies have been, the agencies even that I have been associated with, have been, well, let's not chase them because, again, that danger. So we weigh that risk. And so what I determined was, you know what, I certainly don't want anyone to get hurt. So if we try to stop someone and it is for a forcible felony or a felon like a stolen car, again, that connection that you and I just spoke of, then let's not just pursue them. Let's not wait till they run out of gas. Let's pull up to them, and let's spin that car around. We got better bumpers now, enhanced bumpers, so that we can spin the car, and as we can do that quickly. And this is exactly what happened in this situation. We spun her around pretty quickly. I don't know that she was expecting that, which is good for me. Kind of makes me smile. Anyway, so then we ended up arresting her. Now it's not unusual for us to stop a stolen car where a female would be driving, but a lot of times the car will be borrowed three times down. You know,
okay,
it was stolen, then someone else borrowed it, but rarely do they actually run. And I don't know, but in this particular situation, I guess. too much video games. I don't know.
Unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
We also had kind of an odd story where the couple invited the former husband over for Thanksgiving, and then he winds up attacking the husband, and the husband, I mean, stabs him, right?
That's it. That's it. The ex-husband, yes, stabbed the current husband. And we're talking about a 70-year-old and a 72-year-old. We're talking about one heck of a Thanksgiving dinner here. But in this situation, exactly what you said, we charged an individual with attempted murder because during that altercation or that disturbance that he pulled out a knife of some sort and ended up
stabbing. Was he there?
Thanksgiving, time to make amends. I don't know.
Okay, trying to be nice. It was a strange story for sure. A couple of sort of not here events, but I wanted to get your perspective on it. Hillsborough County Sheriff Chad Cronister, you familiar with him? I figured you sheriffs all know each other basically, yes, in Florida. Okay.
We certainly know. We talk. Yeah.
Okay. And he's been like 3 terms in office. He was unopposed this last time. He's been tapped to head the DEA.
Right.
Thoughts?
I think it's a good call. I've known Chad for a long time. If you recall, about 4 years ago when the governor came over here to talk about border security, Chad was one of the sheriffs there's 3 or 4 sheriffs that joined me up there and discussing this with the governor. So I know that he has an emphasis on border security and local drugs. So here's why I think it's a good choice. First of all, Chad does a really good job. Hillsborough County is a pretty big agency, probably has as many deputies as DEA has. He understands. He's probably involved in as many DEA type task forces as we are, if not more. Okay. In fact, I would say it probably is more. And all of our DEA task forces have connections, not just throughout the United States, but also internationally, specifically the border. So I think that he's going to bring that local perspective. But when I say local, a big agency, a large agency, large city, the Tampa area, where there's obviously a lot of drugs. And I think that he understands what happens, locally whenever the fentanyl gets to the streets. And I'm sure their agency, like ours, have made many, many large fentanyl cases, which, again, we have as well. And so it's going to take a little time for him to kind of get familiar with what the capabilities are, the complete capabilities are. And I'm talking about internationally with regards to DEA. But I think it's a good choice. I think I've talked to him many times. I've known him, obviously, since I've been the sheriff. And I think he'll do a great job.
Did they call you?
No. Okay. I'm glad. I don't think I would. I don't think I would.
You do have a background in narcotics and SWAT and all that. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, I figured the answer was no, but I did. I figured I would ask.
Yeah. No. I probably wouldn't take that job anyway.
One of the big stories today, actually two, one locally and one not, is one is the Daniel Penny case. And this is the former Marine who wound up in a restraint hold of a guy who wound up dying later on. Would you have charged this guy when you see this particular case?
I've seen the video, and I can't see a scenario that we would charge someone for that. I want people to know and to feel reassured that they can step up and help somebody and not end up in jail because of it. We talk about reasonableness a lot. Mm-hmm. I've seen what they call the chokehold, and that's a stretch to me. There are other people that were kind of helping him out, but I don't know. I just think if someone steps up to help others, I think that you should get the benefit of the doubt. And I can't imagine a scenario that we would charge an individual like that.
Man, it's good to live in Escambia County, I'll tell you that much. Last one is red light cameras. We've been talking about quite a bit today because they started to put up the poles in Pensacola, 9th and Bayou, 9th and Airport, and 9th and Fairfield are in the process of being installed. This, I think of this as being started under Tommy Leiter. Did this start actually a little bit under you with Mayor Hayward?
Well, we did have some conversations about not just red light cameras, but also speed enforcement cameras. Because even back then, they had the technology, and some places do. I think I heard you talk about it.
Yeah, I know Phoenix does, right.
But yeah, there's a lot of places that do that here. We had those conversations, and the company came. This was about the same time that Gulf Breeze started their camera system. And then they were having some issues, and so state statute was going back and forth. So we decided at the time, Mayor Hayward and I decided at the time to let's see where the state falls before we get ahead of ourselves. And so fast forward, I leave, I retire, and then I guess Chief Leiter comes in, and he and Ashton Hayward are still looking at the cameras, and then I think he and Grover were Mayor Robertson
pushing for it, right?
We're pushing for it. So where it started, who signed the paperwork? I guess DC and him did, but it was something that we've been looking at for 10 years.
You a fan?
I think that it's a great enforcement tool for certain intersections. I'm not a big brother kind of guy.
Right,
I'm
right.
I'm more of a freedoms, which is odd because I'm trying to put cameras out on main roadways for our interstates.
Right.
But all of our cameras are on roadways, you know, on public areas where you have little to no expectation of privacy.
Right.
But and these cameras are doing. If you think about the intersections, it's almost impossible for a police officer or a deputy, for that matter, to stop to stand at one area and. First of all, if you see someone running it, if they don't run right towards you, they're not, if that you got 25% chance, right?
Right.
So if they're not running towards you, it's hard for you to get out. So you're causing more trouble if you're trying to chase someone through a mid 9th and Bayou. You have to run your lights and stop all these cars, and it's just by the time you get up there, it's just congested. It's a mess. So I support it at certain large intersections where law enforcement has a difficulty with the enforcement.
And where there's a habit of running red lights. And there clearly is.
That's those almost everywhere.
Yeah, that's everywhere. Yeah. Sheriff Chip Simmons, as always, thanks for the time and the perspective and the information and for keeping us safe. I appreciate it, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.
Isn't that such a terrible thing that, you know, everybody knows everybody runs red lights? Like, that's just, almost that's the most poignant part of that whole interview is when he's like, yeah, it's everywhere. Unfortunately, it's terrible. Also, again, just a reminder, Sheriff Chad Cronister has pulled his name from consideration for the DEA chief. So we're back to the drawing board on that to figure out, you know, who Trump is going to actually put up for that position. 554 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're considering that next vehicle, Frontier Motors is a great selection of good quality used cars. You know, you don't have to pay the new car price, but you're going to be probably the second, maybe the third or the fourth owner, but, you know, somewhere in that vicinity. Cars that are 2 or 3 or 4 years young with 10 or 20 or maybe 40,000 miles on them that are in great condition that Frontier, their whole idea is to sell new condition cars that are not brand new. So you get a great car that's going to last a long time that they warranty to 100,000 miles or 10 years that you can count on, but not having to pay that brand new car price is kind of the advantage of that. And a whole lot of cars on the lot that you can choose from, 300 different makes, models, years, and trim packages and all that, so that you can really see what you like, what you don't like, and then shop side by side without having to drive around to 5 or 6 different places and then try to remember. Because, you know, about the third car you drive, what was that first one like again? It can be a challenge. Well, at Frontier, you don't have to really remember. Just go, oh, yeah, that one, because it's right there. You just drove it a minute ago. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Join Claimology tomorrow at 9:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Matthew Vanderford with Claimology will be talking about insurance claims. He'll be discussing storm claims, as well as the importance of being properly insured prior to a storm and inspections after a storm. Matthew will be taking calls to answer your questions, so you'll know what to do before the next storm arrives. That's tomorrow at 9:30 with Claimology on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Deck your halls with windows and doors from New South. We keep your home comfy and cozy and can save you hundreds a year on energy bills. Plus, every product we make and install is guaranteed for life. It's another reason to be jolly all year long. Now, through December 31st, you have one more reason to celebrate. Buy 2 New South windows and doors and get one free. Visit newsouthwindow.com/radio to get a quote.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College for Boat Smart on the Pensacola Expert Panel this Friday at 10 a.m. Key Marine sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. Have a boating question for Stephen? Then give us a call at 437-1620. It's a dream team, so join them this Friday at 10 a.m.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
This is Chris Bryan, host of Pensacola Right Now, wishing you a happy Hanukkah, a Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 558 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Good to have you with us. My phone number, you can always text me. Questions, criticisms, agreements, disagreements, you know, I love the bumper music, whatever the case may be. I remember that movie. Or I remember the CBS special presentation music. My five-year-old years flash right before my eyes again. And in low-grade graphics, too. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, I heard you mention this earlier. There is some word that President-elect Donald Trump may be considering replacing his defense secretary pick, Pete Hegseth. Report out in the Wall Street Journal says Trump is looking at a few people, including Governor Ron DeSantis, as possible replacements.
I love the idea. I hate that we would lose him. He's not an official nominee yet, so I'm not going to get too worked up about this. But as a Matt Gaetz, then you get Pam Bondi. This is a Pete Hegseth, and then you get Ron DeSantis for SecDef. I mean, he starts to honestly look like a genius choice for the job because of his background and his experience and his willingness to fight to eradicate DEI. I mean, I really do kind of love it. Anyway, go ahead, sir. What else you got?
No, great picks, but talk about throwing Florida into chaos.
Yeah, right, exactly. Losing everybody in leadership.
And there's another report out. A majority of employees are apparently keeping an eye out for a new job. More and more workers are apparently feeling detached from their jobs. This is according to a Gallup survey, which found 51% of people that are working are actively looking for new jobs.
Look at me being in the minority.